some football!
Oh, intermission.
No, it's halftime.
Here comes Beckett. Down goes Shaw. The ball is out. Arkansas's got it at the 1 foot line.
Blue!
Yes, sir.
Do you trust that I do not want to see you die here tonight?
Sir, yes, sir.
Blue, you're my boy!
You can actually feel Razorback Stadium shaking underneath our feet right now.
I don't want them to gain another yard.
Here's the God in football.
Can't wait for the next game, and the years to come, because victory is going to be habitual.
You're listening to the Halftime Podcast.
Heading out to Razorback Stadium Saturday for the 6:30 kick, and not for the light of heart or for the light of clothing, because you're going to need as much clothing as you've needed for any football game this season, save for maybe if you made it to Little Rock for the spring game. I guess that'll probably be still be the coldest game of the season. Unless, are we supposed to get into the 30s, or is it low 40s at some point Saturday night? You know that the sun will be down at kickoff. Now that we have taken daylight savings and trashed it up and thrown it away, and we're no longer saving daylight. So night really begins about 5 o'clock, so the lights will be nice and bright. And that'll be right about the time that you're ready to go and bundle yourself up. So, yeah, I got to get some, got to buy some gloves, got to get some boots, some heavy socks, and something a little bit heavier than the Arkansas baseball cap that I usually wear, because it's going to be just a little colder. For some way, you know, Saturday is a day, Ty, that I would wish to have your lovely locks, your hair, the hair on the top of your head is what I'm talking about, because it's going to be, I'm going to need two hats, I think, to warm up somehow on Saturday. Hopefully, Arkansas football comes out a little bit warmer, though, and they're going to be facing an angry LSU team that got pushed around the field. They're a good first quarter team, though. That's one thing, you know, and Arkansas has struggled in the first quarter. So get out there nice and warm. Have yourself a good first quarter, and maybe that can set the tone for the game. You know what I feel, Ty? I feel the same way that we felt leading into the Auburn game. And I think I feel the same way that I feel about when Arkansas plays against Mississippi State. To win against LSU, you've got to grind this game down and make it ugly. Absolutely ugly. The problem is, you know, Auburn, they're just kind of ugly overall. They're kind of having that sort of, it's not necessarily an ugly season, but there's, you know, it's not the prettiest season. It's got some ugly written on it. LSU, that's just an ugly team, and I think they would take that as a compliment. They know what they are. They're not going to win a lot of pretty games, because LSU ain't going to play a lot of pretty games.
Nope. I mean, you put it out there, and you put it, nailed it on the head. I mean, look at Joe Burrow's stats, for instance, Phil. Guy's thrown six touchdowns, four picks, and he's completing like 53% of his passes.
It was so funny, you know, the last week when we're talking about some of the other quarterbacks that have beaten Alabama throughout Nick Saban's history, and then trying to say, is Joe Burrow the next guy to do it? Knowing full well kind of the answer was going to be no.
Yeah, and there's a couple outliers in that list. Brian Johnson for Utah, Jordan Jefferson, and not Matt Flynn. I'm blanking on who the other quarterback was for that year. And then you have Steven Garcia. But that's about it. Every other quarterback, for the most part, is elite. And so with Joe Burrow, I had some LSU friends that were texting me, and they were like, I think we're going to get him on Saturday. I said, no. Your defense has always been there. And they showed up, even though they allowed 29 points, still showed up in that game. No one's going to hold Alabama less than 30 points all year long, Phil. The constant destruction for LSU in that game and over the course of the last couple years when it just comes to their season overall has been their offense. And you look at who they have now, they don't have a Darius Geis. They don't have a Kevin Falk. They don't have a Leonard Fournette back there. Brissett's a pretty good running back. He's not a great running back.
Yeah, that's the one big difference, is there's not that obvious star running back. You know, they haven't had the quarterback in a long time, but they've always had the tailback. They got a couple of them, though. You know, Brissett, Edwards-Helaire, but it's not quite at the same level.
Yeah, and also their pass rush isn't there. Glenn Dorsey's not there. You don't have Kiki Mingo. Their pass rush hasn't been kind of similar to Georgia. It's been down this year, which you think LSU, you think tremendous secondary and speed all over the field, and a lot of times that alludes to having a great pass rush, and it kind of translates to that, but it really hasn't this year, which I thought was a little interesting. And Tua just seemed to have all day. That was the reason they held them to only 29 points to the Crimson Tide in that game was not because of the defensive line. It's because of that secondary. Because you have Grant Delpit, a sophomore, who's going to be an NFL caliber safety. Just going to be he's just a stud already. He's comparable to Jamal Adams, who they had a few years back. And then Greedy Williams and Kristen Fulton. I mean, those guys are absolute studs. And so now it's one of those things where Arkansas has to establish the ground game. And LSU's kind of been inconsistent when it comes to giving up rushing yards. So for Rakeem Boyd, you got to have a full, sustained game from him. Otherwise, you're not going to get anything going against this passing defense.
They're going to need to mix it up a little bit in the sense of who's running the ball, because you know there's no Devwa Whaley available. Again, the injury to the ankle, surgery, still recovering, but not ready to get back out there and tote the rock. So aside from Boyd, they're going to need Ty Story to run the ball, mm-hmm. because that's what he's done better more than anything else this season. And if you got a couple of guys that can, Ty looks like somebody who really can run. I mean, maybe that's one of the surprises this season, or that we just didn't know very much about his athleticism or how he's grown as an athlete or gotten faster or developed some moves while he's been sitting for these past couple of years. But he can move. He can run. And Arkansas will need every move and every run that they can get from Ty. And maybe it's also time for Ty Story to have, you know, his moment, mm-hmm. so to speak. With one of those moments that a lot of the recent quarterbacks, even when they haven't been able to point to tons of wins, there's still been moments. Mm-hmm. You know, thinking of Austin Allen against Ole Miss. Or against TCU, right? Or thinking of a couple of wins for BA. Maybe this weekend is where you can get a performance like that from Ty Story. But then on the other hand, it does feel a bit like a reach.
Even KC Dick back in 2008, the final pass to London Crawford, which we threw on our Facebook page earlier today since 2 days away. You want for Ty Story. I mean, it's senior night. He's not a senior. He's a redshirt junior. But it's a great opportunity. You're going against one of the better defenses in college football. It's a night game. It's a rivalry game. And as you mentioned, B.A., Austin Allen, you can go back to Ryan Mallett with a couple of his performances. Probably LSU back in 2010 was his signature performance. Tyler, I'd probably say the Texas A&M game in 2011 was his. It's your time. Like, it's time to show up. It's time to prove, like, hey, Kelly Bryant, there's a possibility of him coming in there next year. Well, I kind of want to end the season on a strong note, so I'm not in the back of everyone's mind. I still want this job, not only this year moving forward, but next year as well.
Essentially putting a stamp on it,
yeah.
By having one moment, one shining moment, which we usually don't think about that in one November. I know it's not.
That's basketball, NCAA tournament basketball right there.
Exactly,
Phil.
Right, but you're looking for at least one shining moment out of these next three games to finish the season with some sort of a positive note. Interesting weekend on the Hill, and I hadn't even realized about the soccer match. I mean, we usually don't ever talk soccer or Le Footy on our little show here, or I think really on ESPN Arkansas very much. But making the NCAA tournament is an achievement of itself, and of course Arkansas soccer finishing runner-up in the SEC tournament, losing in penalty kicks to LSU, but now getting an opponent at home, hosting for just the second time in program history. And who is coming up, kind of following my trails from the Rock, but the Little Rock Trojans for a 7 o'clock. Is it a kickoff? Is it called a first kick? How do you open a football game? I mean, you open a football game with kickoff, tip off of basketball, first pitch for baseball. How do you start?
I never call.
How do you start a soccer game?
I never called it kickoff in high school. I honestly can't remember what we called it. To be honest, it's been a while since I've been immersed in soccer.
Well, whatever it is, it's at 7 o'clock at Razorback Field, the soccer field.
Beautiful field, by the way. We played our state championship there.
Absolutely, really, it's great. And I'm sure it's going to be rocking.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure that place is going to be absolutely jammed. Because we got the women's basketball game to open the regular season, Screaming Kids Day, tomorrow morning.
Your favorite day of the year.
At 10:30. I thought I heard during Mike Nabor's press conference that there are over 50 schools that are going to be showing up. So I tell you what, I'm going to be stopping at the local pharmacy sometime in the next probably 12 hours and picking up an entire bag of earplugs. Because I'll be able to hear myself just easily.
I thought you were going to go to the prescription route.
Yeah, but for those many kids, it's not me that needs the prescription. It's the teachers. It's the bus drivers. It's the ones that are actually, you know, responsible for all of the little ones that will be there. So that's 10:30 tomorrow. I get to be on the call. Looking forward to getting back on the network and back with Coach Neighbors and his staff, and what should be an exciting season. Men's basketball. They traveled to El Paso yesterday. They have a really interesting day planned today, and we'll get into that a little bit later. But, of course, they're playing tomorrow night. That's a 7 o'clock tip, or is it a 6 o'clock tip, I think?
6
o'clock tip right here on ESPN Arkansas.
It said Chuck was on the call.
Really?
Have you talked to him about
that?
No,
I didn't. If it said Chuck is on the call, then he's on the call.
So he's going from El Paso, Texas. He's probably not going to get back to Fayetteville till what, after 10? Probably, and then maybe 11.
I think they're looking after midnight.
You think?
Yeah.
Jeez Louise. I guess that, yeah, you're probably right.
Hey, that's just called crossover season. Chuck can deal with it as best as anybody because he's a morning guy as far as I know. So I think he'll have no problem getting up as long as the coffee maker works.
Speaking of crossovers, 100 days out, man, till baseball.
Well, that just gets us one day closer to double digits for the countdown. You're going to have to give me countdowns for the start of baseball season the way that you do for every Arkansas football opponent on Twitter and the way you do for now for basketball. Okay. I jokingly said, I guess I'm going to have to find my own gifts for the women's basketball countdowns. Baseball, I don't have to look for my own, do I?
They'll be a little easier. I will say this. I'm a little more knowledgeable. Not a little. A lot more knowledgeable on Arkansas basketball and football games, just because that's what I paid more attention to over the years. So you might have to remind me, hey, blank so-and-so did this back in the day. This is a number.
All I want to start with is a countdown to opening day. That's it. The same way that you probably did for the countdown to opening day of football season. You know, it was the biggest countdown since the ball dropped for the first time.
And then the season started.
Times Square. And then the season started.
and then you lost interest.
And you wanted it to end as soon as it started, right?
Yeah.
Hey, we do have somebody on the line. Want to get to him before we step aside for any breaks. And again, if you want to get in with us on Halftime, dial 877-377-6963. Let's go to Colin. He's listening in Fayetteville. Colin, hello.
Hello.
Hey, how you doing? What's going on?
I'm doing good. How are you guys doing?
We are great. Better now that you've called. What do you want to talk about?
I think we're going to talk a little LSU-Arkansas football this weekend.
Well, tell me what you're thinking.
Oh, well, you know, Ty knows me very well. So being an LSU fan and an Arkansas fan, it's kind of tough. I got to give both sides. I grew up in New Orleans, went to the University of Arkansas, so it's a tough game for me when it comes to who to root for. But I actually think we're going to have a pretty solid game on our hands this weekend. I know a lot of Razorback fans probably think it's going to be a blowout, and a lot of people think it's going to be close because they just got blown out by Alabama. But I think there's a couple key things in this game that I think really, really would help the Hogs. I think the most important thing is I think the Hogs have to establish some kind of run defense or run offense, don't you think? Because I don't think they're going to be passing the ball very, very well on this LSU secondary. And if LSU makes them one-dimensional, it might be a low-scoring game, but it might be an ugly low-scoring game.
And don't give up on the run if you fall behind a little bit, because it's not like LSU has the sort of offense where you're expecting them to pile up point after point, touchdown after touchdown. You still might be able. You fall behind a touchdown, 10 points first quarter, maybe you can still establish that run, because you're going to need to establish it to open up any opportunity to throw the ball.
Right. No, yeah, I think the thing is if they abandon the run and start trying to throw the ball 35, 40 times, I think it goes the Tigers' way just because of – I mean, they're not going to – they might get some chunk plays out of that secondary, but I just don't – I don't see them having much success throwing the ball a whole lot down the field. I think they got to get Boyd and the running backs going really, really well in order to have a pretty good shot. So,
yeah, Colin, we were talking about LSU's defense as a whole, a little to kind of open up the show. I mean, defensively in, like, the back end, it's one of the best they ever had. You go back to 2011 when you rolled out Reed, Matthew, Morris Claiborne. I mean, now you got Delpit, Kristen Fulton, and Greedy Williams. I mean, that secondary is just full of just crazy athletic talent. But when it comes to the kind of the front line, you don't have necessarily, besides Devin White, I mean, he is probably one of the best, if not the best linebacker in college football. But their front four is not typical LSU, like a Glenn Dorsey, a Kiki Mingo. I mean, right now they're like 50th in college football rush defense. They're giving up close to 150 yards rushing a game.
Well, I think if you look at, I think that's been the biggest. That's been their biggest thing the last. I mean, when back in the Miles, you know, from 2007 to 2012, you know, they had a great secondary, but that was their bread and butter was winning the line of scrimmage, and you can even tell. Their biggest, like, in the game last week against Alabama, Joe Burrow was terrible. The offense was awful. But if you watch Alabama's defensive line, they just mauled LSU's offensive line. They're just not deep on the on the scrimmage right now. And you can, they just don't have the bodies and the athletes that they used to up there. So that's if they can get running the ball through those big guys, I think they'll see a lot of success in that game.
So Arkansas's third in the SEC right now in sacks. They got 23 of them. I don't think I would have ever thought heading into this season that Arkansas would have more sacks than LSU as a defensive
player. No.
That just doesn't make sense to me.
But you knew you had a defensive scheme, at least the way that John Chavis likes it, where you're coming at the quarterback from more angles than previously. Been some opportunities as well. There have been some opportunities. Scott, we appreciate the phone call. You want to give a final score prediction before we let you go? Because you're saying that this is going to be a closer game than people are expecting. The line is 13.5. I've learned from your friend Ty, the final score matters relative to the line. So what are you thinking there?
I think Arkansas definitely covers that spread. I'd say it's going to be 31-21. LSU win, but Arkansas covers the 13.5.
So good coaches win, great coaches cover. So Chad Morris is going to get the cover on that.
I think getting over 20 points against that defense, and Colin, appreciate the phone call. Thanks a lot. That would have the same feel as, wow, they lost, but they put up 31 against Alabama. It's like a half victory. Not a moral victory, but a half victory.
I think with kind of dealing with that, these games are just, they're weird. And so the 13.5 line, I remember tweeting this out. I think it was 2 years ago. 8 of the last 10 games have been decided by 17 points or less. So 13.5 is kind of like right at it. I could see it being. Here's what I think is going to happen, Phil. Mm-hmm. And I'll get to my score. We'll get to our score predictions tomorrow. LSU is either going to come out and maul Arkansas, or Arkansas is going to find a way to win this game. I don't think it's either or. I don't think it's close if LSU wins. I think LSU is either going to come out and absolutely destroy Arkansas, take them to the woodshed, or LSU's going to find a way to blow this. It's more about LSU blowing this game and less about Arkansas winning it.
You're listening to the Halftime Podcast. Follow the guys on Twitter at PhilElsonPXP and at Ty Sports Radio.
And it's Joe Adams with a hurdle. Great speed. Adams down the sideline. He's gone. 92 yards for a touchdown.
We're ready to make that transition into basketball. Even with, you know, I don't even know how to set expectations for basketball this year because you just don't know what to expect with such a young club. But LSU is kind of a different thing. You know, they've got this, they've got a football season that, I mean, if you're going by the committee's rankings, LSU still has a shot to make the Final Four, which is amazing to think with two losses and some of the teams that they're ahead of. And their basketball team finally is in a position where they're starting the season ranked. But as I know from traveling to Baton Rouge, and most of you probably know it too, it goes football, baseball, and then a whole lot of other things before it goes to basketball.
Even though they had Shaq and Pistol Pete, like, but no, you're exactly right. It's just, I mean, we're in the South, like football. But the thing is, baseball at a couple of these schools overtakes basketball. I mean, we mentioned it, we'll mention it again. SEC baseball, it's the best conference in America. The competition that you face in SEC baseball dwarfs what you face in SEC football. And that's coming from a guy that values football more than baseball. And you can speak to it better than I can.
You know, it's kind of funny when you think about how in the SEC, and let's just do it by the division that Arkansas plays in. In the SEC West, the football, there's Alabama, and then there's everybody else. SEC West Division baseball is everybody else, and then there's Alabama down below everybody else. That's pretty much the way that it is.
The inverse, basically.
That's exactly right. That's the level of depth
in the SEC for baseball. But I'll give you a question, Ty. What sort of answer do you think we get from a Baton Rouge sports columnist before the start of basketball season? If we ask him basketball, just one question, do you get an answer or do you get it's still football season? I don't have an answer.
You know what? Scott does a lot of the different sports, so I would think he would have an educated answer where he wouldn't play the card, hey, it's still football season. We haven't really gotten into that.
Either that or you can just make something up.
Yeah, I mean, Will Wade's done a pretty good job down there for LSU, and they're better than they have been in years past under John Brady and some of the other coaches they've employed. So, yeah, I think that fans, but it's kind of the mild-mannered, like, yay. It's like Kentucky, and it's not to that extent, because Kentucky's having the best football season they've had in however many years, but LSU fans are like, hey, if we have a good basketball team, then great. I'll bring back something you said. Another event we can drink before and then go to.
So. Well, all those events. You can drink before any event if you really wanted to.
That's fair.
It's just a matter of what it is. You could drink before doing this show.
I don't want to do that.
I just wouldn't advise it.
I like my job.
Yes,
good. I like working for a living
and eventually
and making money.
Instead of drinking and not getting paid.
Yeah.
Eventually, though, when the show's over, I will get you to have a little vodka with me at some point. It will be way after 2 o'clock in the afternoon. We'll do it at like 6.
Like today?
No, not today. Okay. I gotta head up to Fayetteville.
I was gonna say you gotta go to Fayetteville, and I gotta work out after this. So I don't...
You sure do. You sure
Whoa,
do.
That's zing!
Right. So another thing I want to ask Scott about, because the Advocate has all of their writers that cover LSU make a prediction. I didn't get a chance to bring this up with Bob Holt because Wally does predictions weekly in his column.
Do ball Wally?
And I don't know if the other writers are allowed to do picks or if they're just not asked to do it. And if it's strictly, you know, Wally's realm of making picks.
You can't capture that. That's like Tommy saying, hey, I'm the only one that can make picks on this. That just doesn't make sense.
But I mean the picks that go in print, because on the Advocate, these are actually printed, these picks.
I know, but that would... I know he has that picks before, but that wouldn't make sense that Tom and Bob and the other guys wouldn't be allowed to.
Well, you never quite know about certain egos of people that run things and whether or not they want said spotlight to be on them the way that they write things anyway. That's the way you would think to begin with.
It's a good thing you don't have an ego. I don't know.
None at all.
No, I don't. I mean, I shouldn't have one. 23. I don't know jack.
But Scott Rabelais says 34-19 LSU.
That's not a bad pick. So
that's not covering.
Here's the thing.
That's not covering,
it's not,
Ty.
So
that's not what we're looking for.
Nope. Looking back to Vanderbilt, we were making fun of the Tennessean riders because every single one of them picked Vanderbilt to win.
They were right.
It came to fruition.
They were right.
And the Commodores came in here and pretty much kicked Arkansas's tail.
Who else picked Vanderbilt to win that game?
I think you did.
That's right. I didn't like it.
Is there a correlation, you're saying?
Can't be. You know there is no such thing as a broadcaster jinx. This is something we'll get into during the baseball season when somebody blames me for some ridiculous ninth inning comeback or for someone losing a bid on a no-hitter. It's obviously something I said on the air. Right. And the magic bullet theory worked, too. The other Advocate writers, Brooks Kubena, that we had on last week, he picks LSU 42-14. And Sheldon Mickles picking 40-13. I guess the big headline there is LSU 40 points? Really? I don't understand. Arkansas's defense has had probably more shares of its downs in SEC games than ups, but I don't know. I don't see anything about LSU.
It's not like the LSU
offensively.
Yeah, it's not like they've been
that.
Explosive.
Unless they're expecting a couple of pick sixes, and that's what I think they might expect. For LSU to get great field position and turn that into points on something like, 15 or 20 yard drive.
So LSU's defense for the first time all season was able to pick off Tua. That's the only pick he's thrown all season long. So you think about that. You think about the caliber of wide receivers that they get to face now with Arkansas. It's a big drop off from Jerry Jeudy in Alabama. A big drop off going against like Jordan Jones, Jared Cornelius. Like it's pretty evident the talent gap there.
15 interceptions thrown by Arkansas, 15 interceptions by the LSU defense.
Six of those were in one game. You gotta think about that. So, so nine outside of North Texas. So, but
just
still.
That happened against North Texas was
that,
bad.
Yeah, that's
enough.
A good point. Cole Kelly accounted for four of those. So,
and hadn't seen the field. Has he thrown a couple of passes since then, but
yeah,
not many.
But he has not started since that game. So.
Well, we better get into it here because usually at this point of the week, we did a little research. I did just slightly less research than before. But if you got the dime, we got the sport. You spent what?
How did I spend that much money?
You got a skull for your brain, a plastic sleeve for your comb, and a wallet for your money.
Being stupid or something.
Thomas is stupid as a stupid does.
I'll even throw in season tickets for the Lakers.
You spent what?
All right, Ty, you give it a start. You're going with a rivalry that I think gets forgotten about sometimes. You don't think that you forget these two schools are hated rivals, really.
Yeah, Deep South's oldest rivalry between Auburn and Georgia. First game was played back in 1892. Auburn won that game 10-0. Right now, you got club level seats in Athens, Georgia, $2,530. At like the 5 yard line.
The 5 yard line. So, it's not even a great seat.
Yeah, so I'm wondering, since it's club, does that include food and alcohol, like food and drink? That
wait
has
service.
To wait, sir. I mean,
somebody to slather on some sunscreen if you need it for you.
I remember you remember me talking about the Yankees all inclusive like box package for like $100. You get all you can eat, hot dogs, drinks, or it was like 85 or something
for like four innings.
Yeah, Dudley was talking about this Cardinals game he was going to or went to that. He pushed like buttons and that you can order food and drink and it was all inclusive and stuff. So maybe that's what Arkansas should trend towards, where it's just everything's all inclusive. I think that would get some fans in the seats a little more. All you can eat corn dogs on Saturday night. Throw an extra $10 on your ticket.
You'd be a simple one. All you want is the all you can eat chicken nuggets. Doesn't matter where they're coming from, as long as they're breaded and used to be meat on a chicken. I think you'd be happy with the all you could eat.
I felt so bad because I did the double whammy. For those unfamiliar with the double whammy, it's Wendy's has got a dollar fry special right now for any fry, and then Burger King's got the 10 nuggets for a dollar special. So you go to Burger King, you get 20 nuggets, and you go to Wendy's and you get a large fry. I did that on Tuesday night, and I felt awful the next morning. Oh my god!
You felt great about yourself while you were eating it because you figured this whole situation out, and then
$3. Then you got then for you, all that food.
Yeah, then it really sits in you for a good long while. Yeah. All right, so that is a lot of money though for the 5 yard line, $2,530. That seems a little much. You know what seems a little much? The fact that Ezekiel Elliott, his cap hit for the Dallas Cowboys is $6.8 million. He's doing okay. You know, obviously, I think the problems for the Cowboys more deal with the offensive line, maybe quarterback, than anything else. $6.8 million for 680 yards, which is fourth best in the NFL, and just four touchdowns. It's a lot of money for some production. James Conner, who has, I think is becoming maybe the biggest value of any player in the NFL, at least for maybe like yards per dollar. His base salary, $528,000, former product out of Pitt, second season for Connor, 706 yards, leads the AFC in rushing, second best in the NFL to Todd Gurley, and he's fourth in the NFL with 9 touchdowns. $528,000, and still, he's under contract for 2 more years. Doesn't have a cap hit any more than, I think, something like $750,000. Great value, and you think of Pittsburgh just letting Le'Veon Bell twist in the wind now, and he's been reduced to tweeting upside down to get attention. Did you see these tweets that Le'Veon put out?
Coming from Miami or something?
No, he's back in Pittsburgh now. He's working out at a gym, and he tweeted up. I don't know how he pulled this off. His letters were upside down in a two-tweet storm, which isn't really a storm. It's just a drizzle of two tweets. The letters and wording was all upside down. It was very odd. It was a look-at-me moment because everybody's more looking at James Conner now and thinking, well, Le'Veon, you're pretty much done for the year.
When does he have to report by? In order to play. You remember?
I think it's either this week or next week, and that's it.
It's less than 7 days. I'm blanking on it.
At this point, I think it's a moot point.
They play tonight. I need a big James Conner game tonight. So I'm
big
going,
Thursday night game.
Big Thursday. It's
Pittsburgh,
good.
Carolina.
It's like we talked about, Thursday night games. Aaron Andrews, Joe Buck.
Maybe a Super Bowl preview.
Yeah. Troy Aikman. I mean, this is a solid, rock solid slate of games they've had. Now, last one, we made fun of it because it was the 49ers and the Raiders. This is a solid one.
This would be the opposite of that.
Oh, yeah, exactly. All right, you mentioned value. I'm going to go just dog crap. Nathan Peterman's contract. This is the Buffalo Bills quarterback.
Another Pitt product.
He went to Pitt.
He's a Pitt guy.
Okay.
First he was a Tennessee guy, then he was a Pitt guy.
Also went to Tennessee. Yeah, he's thrown 7 picks this season, only 1 touchdown. And it's not like they're paying him an egregious amount of money. It's $555,000. But still, I think I could throw a touchdown in the NFL and walk away clean with $555,000 for a year. My goodness gracious, Phil. Imagine that.
They could have paid Tarod Taylor. Did I say his name correctly
time? Yeah.
Tarod. So they could have paid him $10 million, which is what the Browns inherited for signing him. So maybe it's...
I didn't want to do that.
He would have done the same that Peterman's doing.
Yeah. Well, no.
Maybe not to that level.
7 interceptions to 1 touchdown, Phil. Come on, man. Like, Tarod's middle to late pack, and Peterman doesn't even belong on an NFL roster.
Sure,
like,
he does, as a second stringer or a third stringer or a practice teamer.
You're getting all, what's the word? You're sentimental with your Pitt values. Oh, he's a Pitt guy. We got to stick together. No.
No, I just think, like, for the value of $555,000 just to have a quarterback to even take a snap is almost value-like for a team like the Bills. They were expecting to have a season, weren't they? Not with this guy at quarterback, that's for sure.
Josh Allen was supposed to be the savior for Bills Mafia, and he's come up a little short. He's been injured a little bit, but guy throws a lot of picks. He's got a big arm, but he's not necessarily the most accurate quarterback in NFL history. So that's going to be interesting how that plays out down the stretch.
So I got into thinking of the next one when we brought up the idea of the guy who proposed to his fiance at the 16th mile of the New York City Marathon. She was doing the running. He was doing the proposing, because I think it would actually be more interesting if he was running and proposing at the same time, which would be even more interesting if he tripped and fell while he was doing it. So I remember talking about this the other day. This was a get off my lawn segment, right? It's I just hate the idea of putting your fiance or your girlfriend at that moment on such a stage.
It's her moment, Phil.
It was her moment. She was running that marathon for herself.
He stole it.
Because he made it about him. He made it about him. Why not wait until she finished? Anyway, but I mean, at least she wasn't on a video board, you know, or on television like we see in so many other cases.
I hope she said no.
I've seen this. She said yes. She must love the guy. And it's only a one-time thing.
It's a sap right there.
But a couple years ago, it came out from every Major League Baseball stadium that you got to spend if you're going to ask for a proposal. So you could get away with as cheap of a proposal as $39. And of course, since the Pittsburgh Pirates are about bottom bargain basement for spending money, they are the cheapest.
I was going to say the Athletics.
No, they are the cheapest.
Wow, okay.
The A's, you got to put up $85. Admittedly, there are 5 teams that won't allow proposals.
Can I try and guess them?
I need to be a fan of these 5 teams. Go for it.
Yankees?
No, the Yankees will let you do it for $100.
Red Sox?
The Red Sox are not one of those teams. To propose at Boston, $350.
Okay, you're going to, I would think, like, winning Trump's, like, fandom, so those were kind of the top of the list. Which are the 5?
The Mets,
okay.
The Orioles, maybe if they allowed a proposal or two, they might win a game or two. The Royals,
fans in the stands.
The Angels, and the Blue Jays.
Royals don't allow that? Wow.
Surprising too, because it's a romantic park with all those with all those fountains. The most expensive. Now the Dodgers will let you do a proposal for $75, but to put it on the video board to really embarrass your girlfriend as best as you possibly can, you're going to have to pony up $2,500.
Not worth it.
So if you've got the money to spend that to get on the video board for a proposal, you better have about $50,000 to spend on the ring.
So, what's the percentage of that? 2.5 out of 50? That's...
Don't make me do math.
Sorry.
I just did enough math. That's just it's a lot of money for a proposal, but at least she'll never forget it, and you better know what answer you're going to get. You have to know. If you're spending $2,500 plus a $50,000 ring...
It's 5%.
5%. Does this make sense?
So you're telling me you got to spend 5% just so I can have this for future reference.
I didn't come up with some sort of equation that you have to stick to here, but it just makes sense to me. Because otherwise, I mean, if you have $2,500 to spend on a proposal, what else do you have money to spend on? Just about anything you want.
A prenup?
A golden toilet. Yeah, and a prenup. and a really good lawyer. A really good lawyer.
Oh, man. More money, more problems.
That's right.
You said that?
Well, that was Tupac Shakur.
Yeah.
No, it was actually his rival who said it.
Okay. All right. Last and final one for you, Spent One, for me. So Matthew McConaughey earned a whopping $166,000 for speaking to the Houston graduating class in 2015.
Wow.
So, Phil, if you could, and that was a lot of presidential, ex-presidential candidates, they make a lot more than that. It's like $400,000, $300,000. It depends on who it is. But if you could spend $166,000 and have someone speak to a group or whatever for 30 minutes, who comes to your mind? It can be anyone, any politics, religion, sports, dead, living.
I just want you to know that while you were talking there, if you were Matthew McConaughey, you just made yourself about $2,500. Because $166,000 for a 30-minute class breaks down to $2,766.67 per minute.
No, what even class? It was this graduation ceremony. So
it's even fewer. You're talking probably like 10 grand a minute.
So how much do you think he makes for teaching that class at the University of Texas?
Gosh.
A little high. That's probably the highest paid teacher in that building. I'll tell you what.
I'd pay George Carlin. I'm a huge George Carlin guy. I have been for ever since I was a kid. Maybe the generational gap. You don't know who he is, but you're going to have to look him up. He was a comedian from the 60s, died in 2007 or 2008. He was brilliant. Came up with the seven words you can't say on television or radio. Too bad. There's three more to add to it. Probably the funniest guy that I ever remember adding intelligence to the humor. So I'd have to dig him up. Although in George Carlin's words, he didn't want to be buried. He didn't want to be cremated. He wanted to be blown up and sent on a rocket ship to the moon. So maybe I'd have to find a way to get to the moon and bring him back. But that's the guy I'd pay.
Subscribe to the show on iTunes. You're listening to the Halftime Podcast.
Trying to extend the play, and Brooks Ellis, pick six, will it be? Yes! How about that?
Scott Rabelais is the sports columnist from The Advocate in Baton Rouge. Scott, thanks for your time. How's it going today?
It's going fine, thank you. I'm trying to pick my warmest clothes for Fayetteville this weekend.
That's right. Layers
for a guy who grew up along I-10 along the Gulf Coast.
Yeah, it's going to be the coldest game since the spring game when Arkansas played in about 36 degrees in Little Rock in March. So yeah,
I can believe it.
Yeah, no. That's exactly. So it's going to be a little uncomfortable, just a little bit uncomfortable. So you know, just to put you on the spot quickly, the Advocate has you and Brooks and Sheldon make a pick. And you're picking it to be closer than your other compatriots at the Advocate, but looking at a 34-19 LSU victory. So I guess my first question would be, what makes you think Arkansas can put up 19 against LSU's defense?
Well, you've seen Arkansas be a little more productive in this recent games. I think they're averaging just under 200 yards rushing in their last four games. And so getting a nice balance on offense. I'm just banking on the fact that that they're coming into a better understanding and a better rhythm with a new offense. But at the same time, LSU's offense has been kind of struggling. Yeah, obviously the Alabama game they struggled, but they didn't have a sustained touchdown drive against Mississippi State. Now you're talking about two of the best defenses in the SEC that they've played back-to-back, both very, Mississippi State is just as sound physically as Alabama is. I mean, in terms of tackling ability, Alabama probably has more athletes, of course, but so LSU needs to kind of get on track a little bit, and I think that might take a little time to do that. It would help the LSU cause if Joe Burrow could figure out how to throw a touchdown pass again. He hasn't thrown one since September.
But that just seems to be, what it is with LSU. They're going to live off the run. They're going to live off the defense, and whatever you get from Joe Burrow is kind of gravy, unless you got to get something at the end, and maybe he can deliver for you. It's such a weird season, I think, for LSU when you look at how unbalanced of a team they've been between offense and defense.
Well, the defense has definitely helped carry the way, although. Statistically, in some respects, LSU isn't doing that great. They're kind of in the middle of the pack in yards allowed. They're giving up about 147 yards a game rushing. again, when you play somebody like Alabama, that's going to kind of skew things. But LSU is 11th in the country in scoring defense. They lead the SEC in turnover ratio, and I think that obviously that's an area where Arkansas has really struggled. I think Arkansas is minus 6 on the season. LSU is plus 15. Arkansas has thrown 15 interceptions. LSU has 15 interceptions. I would be surprised if LSU doesn't turn them over. They have the first interception off of Tua last week of the whole season. So didn't do him any good, but they didn't get the first one. So the offense has been surprisingly poor. I think you figured they're going to miss people like DJ Chark and Darius Geis, obviously, but and the running backs are pretty average. They've had a lot of problems on the offensive line. They've had a player, Ed Ingram, maybe their best lineman, suspended all year. They've had a variety of injuries. They've used at least 6 starting combinations on the offensive line. And Burrow has been a little better than Etling, but not a whole lot better. They are striving for some offensive balance, but at the same time, people are starting to get a little antsy, wanting probably more modernized LSU offense, which seems to be the annual cry. I think they're trying, but they're not really getting there to this point.
Scott Rabelais is our guest. You can follow him on Twitter at RabelaisADV. Scott, looking at Dave Aranda, every time it seems like the LSU plays a quarterback worth its salt, they hold him to under his season average, passing yards, touchdowns, whatever it may be. Is he the best defensive coordinator in college football?
If not, he's way up there, and certainly LSU feels that way. You know, Texas A&M came after him in the offseason, and LSU responded with a $10 million, 4-year guaranteed contract. So they're paying him more per year, $2.5 million, than any other coordinator in the country, and a lot of head coaches as well, obviously. He's only making about $1 million less than Ed Orgeron is right now. Let's put that in perspective. But I think Dave is great. Dave is really good at adjusting. You know, you'll see teams, move the ball early in the game, and like, you know, oh, geez, they're going right down the field in LSU. And then LSU will come to the sideline, and he'll tweak this and turn that knob and flip that switch, and then all of a sudden there's 3 or 4 straight 3-and-outs. You know, again, they lost 29-0 to Alabama. The defense was out there a lot, but they kept them from scoring on their first drive, which is the first time Alabama has done that this season, and they made Tua play into the fourth quarter. He's very good at adjusting on the fly. I think you saw that in the Georgia game, for example, which obviously stands as LSU's best win of the season. Georgia was running effectively against LSU, and then they got away from that, whether it was by choice or because they saw other things that LSU kind of sucked them into. But he'll confuse people with coverages and different looks. There'll always be a different look that they haven't seen. And of course, he can afford to do things with his safeties and linebackers because he can trust his cornerbacks, Greedy Williams and Christian Fulton, to play the other team's top 2 receivers man-to-man. And that's always a big advantage for any defensive coordinator. I know that was the hallmark of John Chavis when he was at LSU. When he had lockdown corners, yeah, he was able to do a lot more than when he did not. And I think that's certainly been a part of their success as well.
So LSU, after this weekend's loss to Alabama, dropped to 7 in the college football playoff rankings. Do the Tigers deserve to be ahead of Ohio State, Washington State, and West Virginia, who are all 1-loss teams?
Yeah, it's a very good question. I went to the one of the college football playoff mock exercises that they had in Grapevine this year. We're in the actual room, meeting rooms where the committee is meeting every week this part of the season, and to see how the process works. And you know, they're very, they have their access to a lot of data, and it's all field, and there's no computer rankings that factor into it. It's just what they think by the eye test, what they think about the data. And what it says to me is that LSU only dropping from 3. Now, remember, in the first rankings, LSU was the 1-loss team ahead of undefeated Notre Dame. LSU was 3, and Notre Dame was 4. Then LSU dropped only 4 spots to number 7, still by far the highest-ranked 2-loss team. I think the next highest rank is 4 spots back. What it says to me, one, they think Alabama is really, really, really good, that a loss to them is not a great sin, because everybody's losing to Alabama, and by a large margin. The other thing is that they respect LSU's body of work. LSU is the only team, was the only team in the country last week, I don't know if it's totally true this week, to have beaten 6 FBS teams with winning records. This week, they're the only team with wins over 3 teams in the CFP top 25. That would be Georgia, Auburn, and Mississippi State. So those things have carried a lot of weight with it with the committee, and I think it has put LSU in a position where if they went out and can finish 10-2 with beating Arkansas, Rice, and Texas A&M, not a gimme by any means, but if they can win out, they at least have a puncher's chance of getting back into the college football, the top four, the semifinals. I mean, I don't know if people want to see that or if maybe that's what else you should wish for, but I just wrote a column for our paper, 538.com, said LSU, if they went out, has a 10% chance of making the playoffs. That doesn't sound great, but it's better than a lot of teams. But to your original question, I think LSU's body of work has definitely shown it's better than some of the other teams that you mentioned. And clearly the committee thinks that because they left Washington State after LSU lost like that Saturday. Washington State beat Cal, a good Cal team, at home 19-13. They left them at number 8 and put LSU ahead of them. So I think now, if some of these teams win their conferences, could they leapfrog LSU? Certainly that's possible. LSU would need a lot of help to get back in the playoff, but it's not out of the realm of possibility if enough teams lose, if there's a kind of carnage the rest of the way in November that we often see, that we don't see coming, but we often end up seeing.
No, it's interesting, not to get into the conversation about UCF, but you've got two lost teams in the SEC ranked by the committee ahead of 8-0 Central Florida. So, I mean, it's the body work, and the body work is the conference, and the conference will always, it seems, in the committee's mind, get the upper hand, because that's the only way that I could imagine you could even stomach the thought of a two-loss team still being in the playoff picture. So I want to switch gears real quick. My question, Ty and I were kicking this around earlier today because, you know, we know in Baton Rouge, you know, I think it goes football and then baseball and then basketball. But there's some buzz around Will Wade's program right now, ranked in the top 25 to start the season. Got a lot of talent there on campus. Is there any buzz, I guess, around Baton Rouge for the beginning of basketball season, or do they not even think about that until football season is done?
Well, you're quite accurate in that it's football and then baseball at LSU traditionally, and then basketball. Obviously, baseball has been such a consistent winner, you know, 6 national championships since 1991. Well, basketball is up and down. I've often said this about LSU basketball. They're either winning the SEC and going to the Final Four, or they're last in the SEC. They've either got players like Pete Maravich and Shaquille O'Neal, or they've got guys that are just, yeah, can't play, you know. But this year, there has been a buzz. And I thought coming into the year, there was more dread about it's the first time that I've seen since the days of Shaquille and Chris Jackson back in the early 90s, when there was more dread for football season than there was, and more excitement for basketball season. I think that's been tempered a little bit because, yeah, LSU did make this long run into the top four, the college football playoff rankings, and is still in the top 10 and in line for, you know, if they're trying to win out and have a good season. But there's still a lot of excitement for basketball. They drew over 10,000 for the opener against Southeastern Louisiana Tuesday night. That's a good crowd at LSU. They do have a talented team. I mean, they can legitimately go 9 deep. I mean, Tremont Waters returned, of course, to run the point, but they have Nas Reed, a big, thick, 6'10" forward who everyone feels will be a lottery. Will Wade makes no bones about the fact that he's going to be a one and done and gone to the NBA. Emmett Williams is another player people are going to get used to. I'm not saying LSU's going to win the SEC this year. You know, as everyone can see, it looks like the deepest year in the SEC we've seen in a long, long time. But they're going to be one of the upper echelon teams, and a team that after being put through the wars in this SEC regular season, that we're going to see a lot of teams beat each other up a little bit. John Calipari already said that, talking about the SEC season, that they could be a team that's poised to make it to the second weekend of the tournament, something LSU has only done twice since 1987, making it to the second weekend of the tournament. So people are excited and think there is a chance for that this year. But, of course, if things don't work out, they'll be excited for baseball season, too, because it should be a good baseball team.
Good reason, too. I know your baseball team is going to be salty this next season.
Yeah. Always seems like an underman area. Scott, let me top off the interview with this. I remember you, Johnny Franks, who's our friend in Nashville, and I were sitting at a bar for SEC Media Days in, and was it not AT&T Stadium? What's the Falcons Stadium called?
Mercedes-Benz Stadium.
And we were talking.
Mercedes-Benz Superdome in New Orleans, Mercedes-Benz Stadium in Atlanta.
Yeah. I bet that's a key phrase that people do not want those associated with each other. But I remember us that's talking, right. And it wasn't just us three. I think the consensus among the media down there in Atlanta was that Eddie O was not. We didn't think he was the guy. And the season's not over. That I'll preface that. But were you as surprised that I was that Ed Orgeron has been this? And I know they didn't beat Alabama, which is a big thing for LSU fans. But were you surprised, like it seemed like everyone else was, that Ed Orgeron? They've had a pretty solid season so far. I didn't think they had it in them, to be honest.
You know, I am a surprise. I did not think, like, you know, you saw, you know, there were, you could get odds in Las Vegas back in August that he was going to be the first coach to be fired in college football this year. I did not think that was going to be the case. I didn't think LSU was going to go 4-8 or something like that. But it did look like a tough season that would set up a make or break season for him. In 2019, they had such a difficult schedule. I mean, they played, Miami was in the top 10 at the time, Auburn was in the top 10 at the time, Georgia was number 2, Alabama, of course, number 1, Florida ranked on the road, Mississippi State ranked. I mean, they've played a really tough schedule this year. Then they had all these preseason problems. You know, Ed Ingram was suspended, probably never coming back to the team. Tyler Taylor, one of their best linebackers, drove the getaway car at a pawn shop robbery back home in Georgia. You know, he's not coming back, most likely. Kelavon Chesson, their best edge rusher, lost in the Miami game to an injury. A bunch of injuries on the offensive line. Just, like I said, different lineups every week. A whole new offense. New offensive coordinator, new receivers that you're counting on. New quarterback, certainly. Lost your best running back who went on, you know, as a first-round pick in the NFL. And yet here they are at 7-2. And look, they're a team. LSU is a team with flaws, no question. They have some flaws and some limitations. And if they somehow got in the college football playoff, I'm not saying they will, but and had to play Alabama again, they would get smoked again by Alabama, most likely. But you still want to make it there, you know, and say that you made it. But yeah, this is a season that instead of, at least it looks like right now, with three games to go plus the bowl, that LSU has made progress, not just held serve or regress somewhat, as people figured out at Orgeron. He seems to have surrounded himself with a coaching staff that he is comfortable with and is happy with. Yes, he's certainly letting Dave Aranda run the show on defense. That's a good start. They're much improved on special teams. Cole Tracy may be the all-SEC kicker guy they got to come in and transfer. And if they went out, they're at least going to go to a New Year's Six Bowl, the Sugar, the Peach, or the Fiesta. And I don't think anyone thought that back in the season. I thought they'd be 7-5 and going this year. No, they're already at 7 wins, and they will certainly, not to disparage Arkansas, you know, they will certainly beat Rice next week. You at least get 8, and then you're trying to win 9-10 against Arkansas and Texas A&M. So, yeah, it's definitely been. I said before the season, they get to 9-3. He's done a tremendous job, and maybe should be SEC Coach of the Year. I don't know if he will be or not, but he's definitely done enough to not only keep his job safe, but probably merit a raise and a contract extension, which no one figured would be the case.
Scott, you're good to do it. Travel safe, bundle up, and we'll see you on Saturday at Razorback Stadium.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Winning isn't everything. It's the only thing. You're listening to the Halftime Podcast.